everyone. This is Madeline DeVoe, Content Marketing Manager at iWave. If you love to watch our webinars, but you prefer listening on the go, you can now take in some of our webinars in audio form. This webinar was hosted on February 25th, 2021, as part of iWave's nonprofit thought leadership series. Titled Lessons Learned from Capital Campaign Experts, I spoke with Amy Eisenstein, Kevin Wallace, Aaron Lynch Moran, and Becky Fulmer about their experiences with capital campaigns. We talked about defining a capital campaign, building the right team for your capital campaign, what to consider in the planning phase and the quiet phase, and the best tools and resources to empower your capital campaign, and more. I hope you find the discussion helpful, and please feel free to get in touch if you have any questions. Enjoy. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. We're going to get started in just a couple of minutes. We'll let everyone come in and get settled, but just pop into the question box in the meantime and let us know where you are watching from today. I see people trickling in. Northern Virginia, Portland, Maine, Charlotte, sunny Phoenix, Philadelphia, Portland, Oregon, Boston, Minneapolis, Ontario, Canada, Florida, Minnesota again, Chicago. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. We are just about over start time, so I guess we'll get started. So thanks, everyone. You've joined iWave's panel webinar on Lessons Learned from Capital Campaign Experts. And we're really excited to dive into this topic today. I'm Madeline DeVoe, the Content Marketing Manager at iWave. But for this webinar, I'm just going to be sort of facilitating questions for our wonderful panelists to answer. But before I hand it over to them for their intros, I just want to go over our housekeeping items for the day. So everyone is on mute or in listen-only mode. But please use this question feature at any time throughout the chat. Put in your comments, your feedback, and some questions. We will be doing this in a Q&A format, but any of the questions that we don't get to, we'll try to address in a follow-up blog in written form. So keep an eye out for that as well. We will be sending this recording in a follow-up email, so stay tuned for that later on this afternoon if you want to rewatch it or if you want to share it with a colleague. So with that, I will hand it over to our panelists to introduce themselves. So for me, Rebecca, you're at the top there if you want to start.
All right. Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Becky Fulmer. I'm the Assistant Vice President of Development and Campaign Director for the University of Cincinnati Foundation. We are currently in a $2 billion comprehensive campaign, so it's been a tremendous experience to be a part of that. My background, I have about 15 years experience in fundraising and philanthropy. Started as a frontline fundraiser for a tiny organization where a major gift was $500, but ultimately made my way into prospect development and really loved that space. I worked with The Ohio State University for about 5 years before coming to the University of Cincinnati. Started as executive director of prospect development with that team in about almost 2 years ago, moved into the campaign director role. So learning a lot and really loving being a part of this. So, and thanks for having us, Madeline.
Awesome. So Aaron, did you want to go next?
Sure. I'm Aaron Lynch Moran. I'm one of the partners at the Solis Group. We are a fundraising analytics and modeling firm. So we work with a lot of organizations that are in campaign. Prior to founding the Solis Group, I was at DePaul University for many years. I ended as an associate VP of and chief of staff. One of my responsibilities was being the director of DePaul's comprehensive campaign, the Many Dreams, One Mission campaign. So thanks.
Amy?
Hi, everybody. I'm Amy Eisenstein. I'm the CEO and co-founder of the Capital Campaign Toolkit. And the Capital Campaign Toolkit is a support system for nonprofit leaders running capital campaigns. And I've been in fundraising and consulting for more than 20 years, and I'm really happy to be here.
And last but not least, Kevin.
Hi, everybody. My name's Kevin. I am the president of campaigncouncil.org. About 90% of the work that we do is with small to medium-sized nonprofits who are doing capital campaigns. So everything from needs assessments to feasibility studies to capital campaign management. That's the space that we work in across the nation, a little bit international, and excited to be with you all today.
Awesome, thank you. So we have some really great questions to run through today with our panelists, but just before we dive into them, I just wanted to go over the capital campaign versus comprehensive campaign discussion. So many people tend to use capital campaigns and comprehensive campaigns interchangeably, which can make things a little bit confusing. So traditionally, a capital campaign tends to center on a big facility project, so like building a new senior center or renovating an opera house, whereas a comprehensive campaign refers to a campaign that is intended to raise funds for the organization in general. Comprehensive campaigns often include capital projects, which may contribute to that confusion. So we just wanted to kind of address that before we dive into some questions. Did that pretty much cover it? Do any of our panelists have anything to say about sort of that difference in those campaigns? Yeah. Great. Awesome. So let's dive in to some questions. So one of the big ones is, what are the questions that we should be asking ourselves when considering starting a capital campaign? So Amy, did you want to kick off this answer?
Yep, absolutely. So there are so many questions probably running through the mind of board members, your board members, your executive director or CEO, the development director, if that's you, when the idea of a campaign comes up, it's often overwhelming. So the question is how to start thinking about it. And you know, the first and most basic and maybe most obvious question to ask yourselves is, what do we want to raise money for? So what's the vision? What are the campaign objectives? And you know, one of the things that we hear a lot from organizations is it's our 50th anniversary or it's our 25th anniversary and we want to have a campaign, our 100th anniversary. Well, that's nice and you should celebrate it, but your anniversary is not motivation enough for donors to give really big gifts. So anniversaries are looking backwards, you know, what you've accomplished in the past, and campaigns are about what you're going to accomplish in the future. So they're forward looking. So really thinking about what are we going to raise money for and how much will that cost? Of course, along those lines, you want to ask yourselves, how will our organization, our community look different after we've done a campaign? What difference will it make, right? What's the impact that you're going to have? And really thinking about, you know, do we have the donors? Do we have the donor database? Do we have the staffing? And do we have the volunteers to run a campaign? So I think Kevin's gonna go into a little more detail on that.
Yeah, and when Amy's talking about staffing, you know, we've seen those of us that work especially with the smaller nonprofits, heck, we've done campaigns that are completely volunteer led. And so, you know, there's no staff at all and they're just rolling up their sleeves and they're getting in there and doing it. So is there an actually prescribed level? Yeah, in any level that you've got might be enough to get you through a capital campaign. You just need to understand that it's going to take a heck of a lot of time. And if you've got operations that need your explicit and sole attention, things are going to start to unravel within your organization. So just make sure you've got enough helping hands around, and that's preferably staff, but if it's all volunteer, we've seen success with that too. And then next, tools. Sometimes when we've started working with nonprofits, we say, okay, let me see your marketing materials, and they'll show me like a little threefold brochure that they made on their 15-year-old HP printer, and like, this is our campaign brochure that we're gonna raise a couple million dollars with. It's like, probably not. So let's back up a little bit and see what sort of materials you're going to need in order to really create the case for support that you want. And then lastly, I want to talk a little bit about board support, and that is whether or not you've got an advisory board or a management board or a board that just sits together for coffee once a month and sits around and has a nice time. They need to be 100% in. And I just don't mean like a casual, okay, we'll do that, but literally they're going to give their time, talent, and treasure towards your goal. So if you've got those elements in place, as Amy went through, you know what you're raising money for, and you know how it's going to benefit the community, and you've got these other constituencies behind you, you're probably in okay shape.
Awesome. Thank you. So our next question is, why do we need a feasibility study? And Amy and Kevin, I'll send this one over to you again.
Kevin, do you want to start this time?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and get this one started. First thing I want to recommend to you all that are saying, all right, yes or no on the feasibility side. If you're asking yourself that question, the answer probably is yes. So let's start there. If you've done these things before, and Amy will get more into this, there might be some more in-depth that you're going into, but please take your time doing this. There are right in front of you three different consultants. And, you know, any one of us would probably, depending on where you are in the size campaign in the space that you're working with, respond to an RFP. And we're all great, but we have very different companies. And so you're going to want to look at all of these companies, see what their philosophy is, see how they're going to approach your project, see how much experience they've got within your genre of nonprofit. And oftentimes I just see nonprofits, especially those that have very little to no experience, they're just going to hire the woman down the street that's got a small, you know, shingle consultancy out there and try and bang it out with them. Give yourself some time. Take a look at the folks that are out there. There's a lot of us out there. We have many different specialties, and really hire the group, the individual or the group that fits your need. Go ahead, Amy.
Okay. So I'll just take it a step back and talk about what a feasibility study is, just in case anybody on the line is not familiar with a feasibility study. And a feasibility study, just as its name would suggest, tests the possibility or the feasibility of you of the project that you're thinking about and the dollar amount that you're thinking of raising. So it's twofold. It's not just testing, can you raise a certain amount of money, but it's really looking at, you know, is this project something that your donors and your supporters are behind? And have you designed the project right? And of course, how much do we think you can raise? So I think one mistake that some organizations make when thinking about the possibility of feasibility study is that they don't have a specific amount in mind. Madeline, did you mean to share your screen? I don't know what just changed. Yeah, okay. I wasn't sure if that was on purpose or not. So one mistake I think is thinking that the feasibility study, you can go out without a number and just say, how much can we raise? And talk to people about, you know, if we wanted to raise as much as possible, how much could we raise? Well, that's not what a feasibility study does. You won't get good results from that. You really need to go test a specific plan with a specific dollar amount. That's what a feasibility study is. So you need to do some serious planning and thought about what you want to raise money for and how much that would cost in advance of the study. So that's number one. The other thing that I wanted to say about feasibility study, so Kevin, just to respond to you for a second. So we actually don't respond to RFPs. So it's interesting that you said that, you know, everybody would. I discourage people from creating RFPs. I think actually that you're doing the work that the consultant should be doing by saying exactly what you think you need. Very often a nonprofit isn't quite sure what they need. And so better to come and say what the challenges are, what you're looking for, and let the consultant come back with a proposal in the way that they would address
your challenges as opposed to just responding to what you laid out in an RFP. So anyways, everybody's different, but I just wanted to throw that out there that I'm not a fan of RFPs. And whenever somebody sends it to me, I say, well, if you want to have a conversation, we can talk about it, but I'm not just going to respond. So the other thing that I'll say about feasibility studies, and then I'll be quiet, is that our approach at the Capital Campaign Toolkit is that there are actually three types of feasibility studies that you can choose from and that you should choose from. One is the kind I think that most consultants do, and we call this a consultant-led feasibility study. And that's when you would hire a consultant to go out and talk to your biggest potential donors and supporters and get that feedback on the plan. And they would come back with recommendations and a report to your board. So that's the traditional model. And there are wonderful reasons to do it that way. Another model that we see frequently with small organizations especially is sort of a do-it-yourself, wing it type of model. Honestly, that's better than not doing anything at all. We think that you should go out and talk to your donors before you're going to launch a campaign. Is it going to be perfectly neat and buttoned up? No, but you know, it's good and appropriate if you're not going to use a consultant to go out and do a feasibility study and just go out and have conversations about your project and see if your donors would support it before you ask them for a gift. So we actually, the third type is actually a hybrid of those two. We call it a guided feasibility study. And it is when one of our advisors and campaign experts guides you, the leaders of the nonprofits, to go have those really meaningful, important conversations with your donors and community members prior to a campaign. And, you know, we provide some support so that you're not winging it. But we think that it, for the organizations that it makes sense for, it's a really unique opportunity to go engage your donors and build relationships prior to asking them for a gift. So we're big fans of you going out and talking to your donors, if that's a model that would make sense for you. Otherwise, the traditional model of hiring a consultant so that you feel confident going into a campaign. So, okay, that's what I wanted to say about that.
Can I chime into, you know, on feasibility studies? I think even for organizations that have been fundraising for a very long time, they are critically important. You know, so if you have the infrastructure and you know you've got this down, you think you're still going out and testing new ideas. You want to make sure that those donors are with you and that they're compelling for the kind of philanthropy that you're trying to raise. But I'll also say it really helps identify some gaps. So when I came on as the campaign director at UC, being able to read the feasibility study that was done prior to my time really helped give me insight into how donors are thinking, what some of the experiences that we could learn from the prior campaign. And it's just been a really, really valuable learning exercise. So I'm definitely in favor of them.
Yeah, awesome, thank you. So our next question is, what are the elements of a strong case for support? So Erin, I'm gonna hand this one over to you.
Sure. Well, it's funny because my opinion on the case for support is similar to my opinion on the feasibility study, which is that comprehensive campaigns entail a lot of steps traditionally that are not only useful for what the actual purpose is, but also just help prepare the organization generally. So in terms of the case for support, And for people who don't know, what that is you know, articulating exactly what you're trying to raise money for and why it's important and why it's important right now for your organization's mission. First and foremost, I think it's important to involve as many people in the organization as you can. Obviously, if you're at an organization the size of Becky's, it's going to be unwieldy, but I'm sure Many people across her campus were involved in that. I think that their involvement helps them sort of solidify their thinking in understanding what it is that the project is focused on, and helps them be better at sort of singing from the same songbook, so to speak, when they talk to people that they know. But bottom line, you have to know your audience, which is the major donors. And in order to really get into your head, it's important to do what Amy was talking about earlier, which is really understand what would be motivating to them. So something that might motivate you internally is not necessarily going to motivate them. It is not, it's internally motivating to try to raise a specific dollar amount. That is not motivating to your donors. I mean, some of them maybe on the board would care, but your everyday donor is not going to care if, you know, what your goal is. What they care about is curing cancer or, you know, helping children be more safe or whatever your mission is. So it's important to make sure that you really reflect the mission of your organization and what it is that you're doing.
Awesome. And Becky, did you want to chime in on this one as well?
Yeah, so I'll echo everything that Erin said. And you know, in a higher education environment, in a very large campaign, oftentimes we're talking about campaign brands as much as we are kind of the case statement. So I think, you know, in a large campaign, you're thinking from that level. But to kind of build on what Erin said, what is important to your donors, it's not only what and why, but also who. So really in your case materials, telling the impact stories of who is impacted by this philanthropy and making them the center almost of so storytelling, the center of your case rather than a bunch of facts and figures, you know, about your organization. Those can be useful and they're important because I think, you know, they help establish some context that this is an institution that's going to be able to deliver on its promises. You know, so I'm not saying don't use numbers at all, but make sure that you're weaving in those stories. I think, you know, we have an incredible strategic communications team and design team at the University of Cincinnati. And one of their approaches for our case materials was very creative in that it wasn't like a single very large booklet that was gonna have to last us over the span of 5 years. So we went a little bit shorter and we conceptualized our case materials as a kit of parts. And so we have different pieces to it. There is a shorter kind of central booklet, but there are other elements to it that we can kind of switch in and out and really kind of use in a very custom way, dependent on who the audience is. So I would also say when you're developing your case, think about how you're going to get it out into the market and also be thinking about multiple channels where you're expressing your case. So it's not just, in some cases, it might just be a booklet or a brochure. In other cases, you're thinking about how that case gets translated into a website, into a communications plan, into social media, all of that sort of thing. So you're thinking in terms of, you know, how you're going to tell that story over the time of your campaign.
Absolutely. Thank you. The next question is, when building a team or committee for our capital campaign, what are the roles and responsibilities we need to establish? So Amy, did you want to take on this one first?
Sure. And I'll just add one thing to what Becky was saying. I think it's great that they're using something that's so versatile that they can change up. And I think it's really important to think about your case in this day and age as something that's online, something that's in video format, you know, being creative. But I will say that one of the top mistakes we see potential clients or clients making is thinking that the case for support sort of brochure or pamphlet is the very first thing they need to create. And we actually encourage clients to wait until about 2/3 of the way through a campaign to make this, which is sort of mind-blowing probably to most of you who've not been through a campaign before. But you can raise money from your lead donors with a folder and printed out materials that you print out for each one. And that way, as your campaign grows and develops, even while you're raising the money, you haven't wasted your money on a highly produced brochure that you've printed 1,000 copies of, and then it's trash a year into it. So anyways, I digress. So we're talking about committees. So I think the only thing I would say about campaign committees are that they're a really, really important opportunity to engage your donors. Honestly, campaign strategy is just sort of one big idea to engage big donors. And using different committees along the way are repeated opportunities to engage your donors. So we don't believe in one campaign committee through the whole campaign. You may have a core committee of, you know, a small group of very committed, dedicated people that want to sign up to be your core campaign committee through the whole thing. But there's lots and lots of donors and people in the community who would sign up for shorter term assignments and would be a wonderful way to engage them. So I'll give an example of, you know, a campaign planning committee. This is a committee that we use just for 3 meetings to engage really important donors to help us evaluate our campaign plan after the feasibility study. So we'll invite 10 to 15 people, key donors that we hope will contribute, after the feasibility study to say, here's the plan. Give us your feedback. What do you think? We're only going to ask you to commit for 6 weeks for 3 meetings or something. And you'd be amazed at how you can really engage people who, you know, wouldn't serve on your board, wouldn't sign up to serve for 3 years. So I think of campaign committees as a series of ad hoc moving subcommittees. And then, of course, they're all listed under the campaign committee. But you're not asking every volunteer to sign up for 3 years or 5 years. Those are my thoughts on campaign committees.
And then just to expand that a little bit with what Amy's building towards, and that is, it's a fluid group. So early on, you probably don't have many options other than just what we would term your family. So your administration and or your board. So that's where you essentially have to start, especially if you're a newer or a nonprofit. We're working with a group that's actually a very, very large healthcare provider in Montana. They've just never had to do a campaign before. Wonderful for them, but so, you know, donor database, past donors, nothing. So they just have that group, that internal group to start with, and they'll begin building. But you've got a limited number of people that are going to have a limited amount of reach. And unless you're an established, and you know, with Becky at University of Cincinnati, they are, of course, uncovering new potential donors, but the folks that are going to get them to their $2 billion goal, they've known for years and years and years and have established relationships with them. But let's put yourself in the side of, you know, we're trying to raise $10 million and we only really know how to raise 2. How are we going to get that other 8? The way that you get there is you expand your committee. Somebody makes a gift, they're a great champion of your nonprofit, they want to help you, recruit them in. And don't necessarily, if they come to meetings, wonderful, but really, if they're going to come in and give you the biggest bang for your buck, they're going to help introduce you and help you educate and cultivate other prospective donors that you just don't have a relationship with. So yes, you need to start small, but it's a very fluid group. And oftentimes people will come in for very short periods and then leave you because they're crazy busy people, and or they fall in love with your fundraising efforts and they stay with you throughout. But it's always changing, and it needs to change in order for you to hit the greatest reach possible within your campaign.
Thank you. All right, our next question is, what is your top tip for setting our capital campaign timeline? So Erin, I'm gonna throw this one back to you.
It's a great question. I think that can be one of the trickiest elements with respect to planning a campaign. And for those of you who have not worked on campaigns before, typically how they go in general is that you start out by reaching out to the very top prospects, your very closest donors, and it trickles out from there. So it's almost like if you imagine champagne glasses, you know, that are in a little stack and you pour and it goes into all of the different glasses. That's kind of how campaigns are usually planned out. And for that reason, you know, by the time your campaign is public, you need to have the confidence in your goal to be able to announce that with certainty. The public phase of a campaign is usually involves donors who are less familiar with you, who have, you know, been more recently brought in, and some of them make phenomenal contributions, but they're not as quote unquote easy to secure gifts from as the people that you've cultivated very well and who understand your mission very well. So I would say don't hesitate to get started raising money from your very closest friends as soon as possible. Ideally, you should be at least 60% of your goal before you announce your campaign to the world. You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't say, because of what I do. And for those of you who don't know, I do not work at a campaign consulting firm, but I work at a fundraising information firm. And the data analysis that we help people do is why we work on a lot of campaigns. And from my biased standpoint, having your data in order and knowing with confidence that you can you have a plan to get to the entire goal is just vitally important.
Cool. And I can second that from my stance at iWave.
I'll third that. I think that's really central to thinking about a campaign timeline. You know, from my perspective, I'm in higher education, and in campaigns tend to be or can be quite long. The things that I think about a lot are there in the span of time any big institutional milestones or significant moments? So this is where, if you do have an anniversary, to Amy's point, can't be the only reason, your reason for being in a campaign, but those are often, I think, moments to leverage, and particularly when you're talking about launching a public phase or something like that. So UC celebrated its bicentennial in 2019, and that kind of was the moment that we selected for the launch of our public phase, because there was a natural point there. There was a lot of kind of investment in the prior couple of years about celebrating that. And so we wanted to really capitalize on that moment. So if you have those, the other thing I would think a lot about in campaign timelines are any kind of, in a large organization, you are gonna have leadership transitions that just happen in the course of a campaign, but really thinking about the timing of those, if anything like that would influence your timeline. And then really, this is less about the timeline and more about how you navigate through it, being really sure that you feel confident that you're going to be able to maintain donor interest and have activity kind of throughout the timeline of that campaign, particularly when it's going beyond like a single project. There's lots of stuff going on. How are we going to really energize our donor base and our constituents throughout the duration of this? So you have to think a lot about that as well.
Sure. So our next question is, can you share an example of how you've successfully engaged private donors for your capital campaign? So Amy, did you want to start with this one?
Sure. So I think one of the mistakes that organizations make, whether it's raising major gifts or doing a capital campaign, is thinking that there are somehow donors that are out there. You know, if they could only find the donors out there, right? If Mackenzie Scott would only pay attention to you guys, you know, if Oprah only knew about you, Bill Gates, whatever, you know, whoever it is. The reality is that the vast majority of your campaign donors are going to be your existing donors. And I know it's hard to imagine, but between iWave and Aaron's group, their job is to help figure out who in your existing donor database has the potential to make a campaign gift for you. And so, you know, nobody sort of out there cares about your organization. It's people in your community. You know, of course, if you're a national nonprofit, that opens the geography, but it's still people who are in your community. So people who care about animals or people who care about curing a disease or, you know, that's your community. So it may be a geographic community. It may be a topic-based community. But those are the people that are going to care about your campaign. And so it's really looking through, you know, using tools like iWave and what the Solis group does, and really looking through your donor database and saying who has the potential to be a significant campaign donor and how do we engage them. And the two, you know, key ways to engage your donors at the beginning, towards the beginning of the campaign, are really through the feasibility study, inviting to them to participate and provide feedback, and going to them with your initial campaign plans and inviting feedback and engaging them that way. And then after the feasibility study, inviting them to participate on various fluid or ad hoc campaign committees, so that they're involved. They're part of your insiders. They're among the first to know, those types of things. People love being on the inside. And so if you can even show them your campaign plans before they're rock solid and final, which is what the feasibility study process is about, that's really the best way to engage donors. And in both examples, both the feasibility study or a campaign committee, you can invite people who have never given to your organization before, but are part of your community. Philanthropists in your community who are maybe aware of the work you have done, they may not be regular donors, but they may want to see you take this leap in growth, this transformational leap. And so if there are philanthropists in your community who sort of see that as their role, you know, they're not going to, they haven't supported you before, but they're interested in ensuring that you're there for the long term or that you get to the next level, and they will participate in a campaign because you have such a big vision and it's an exciting time. So that's how you can really engage and draw in some of your donors.
Thank you. And Becky, did you want to take this one as well?
Sure. So I'll definitely second what Amy said there. And you know, I think an inside out approach is absolutely right, that the donors who are really going to support you are probably very close to you already. But even in an institution like UC, that's very large, we've been fundraising for a long time, we have donors who are very close to us. There are sometimes projects that we have within our campaign where there isn't already developed a natural consistency, and and I will say that, you know, having close donors helps with this, but we also have to really think about, and we've got one right now in our health system, a capital project that doesn't necessarily have a really well-developed donor base that has supported this sort of thing at the institution before. So we are having to kind of go out and really develop a donor pipeline for this. You know, to what Kevin was saying earlier, volunteers are going to be critically important for us in helping to make those connections, identify who are those community leaders and those philanthropists who might really be interested in this transformational project that's happening. And I think it's really important also, you know, picking up on something that Amy said, it's not just about the who, but about the why. So, you know, oftentimes we hear when we talk about the people like Mackenzie Scott or Oprah, or even in our own community, well, they're wealthy, so they need to be on our list. And I think we have to go beyond that. They have to be wealthy, and we need to have, you know, a compelling vision to put in front of them, and one we think is really going to align with their interests, and not think about approaching them simply because, you know, they are a prominent member of the community or they have wealth. So I would just say inside out approach here, use your networks. A lot of times at this level, it's going to be relationship based. And think about the channels and the tactics that are going to be the most effective to reach these people. And like I said, it's really volunteer networks, I think, are really, really important here, and very kind of small group, high touch, very individualized and custom outreach to top donors.
Awesome. Thank you. So another question here is, what are your recommendations for tools or resources to use to empower our capital campaign? So I'm going to get everyone to answer this one. Becky, do you mind starting with this, and we'll kind of go around in the circle?
Sure. So I think about three things here. So first, you have to get really clear about why. And so I think a campaign council and a feasibility study, really, you know, making sure your organization is clear on what it's trying to achieve through philanthropy, and you have a compelling vision. And I think campaign consultants can help an organization really refine what that looks like. So why? Get really clear about who. So investments in tools like iWave and business analytics, screening, prospect development team, I think is really important here. And then get really clear about how. And this is less about a tool and more about kind of a mindset. I think because in a campaign, I think execution is key. So that planning piece, and I think that goes back to, you know, a campaign consultant, or, you know, really making sure that you're putting rigor in developing the plan, even though nothing's going to go to plan, you still need to have one, I think. So, yep, counsel, I think, is important, and then the tools to identify who it is.
Erin, would you like to go next?
Sure. I obviously have a bias about tools that involve data, but I do, I mean, part of why I founded my company with my friends is that we all have that belief. You know, if you are able to invest in the kinds of resources like iWave that are going to tell you, you know, who among your database you should be focused on, that's incredibly helpful in helping you to kind of fill in the gaps with, you know, identifying the people that you don't know, and also identifying the people that you thought were at one level and are actually at a much higher level of capacity. And then, you know, I also believe in the kind in analytics, which is what we do, and that kind of tool can help you make sure that you're managing your portfolio correctly, that you're not leaving money on the table, that you're not you know, that you're being productive, that you're raising all the money that you need to raise, and that you have a very clear sense of how you're counting your campaign progress and how you're communicating it out. So that would be my recommendation.
Amy?
Yes, I think in addition to the tools that Becky and Erin already mentioned, I would add a good donor management system. So if you don't currently have a really good donor database that you're happy with and that can generate the reports and the information that you need to access and to track your donors, I would say that that's probably one of the first tools that you want to invest in prior to considering a campaign. Make sure that, you know, your systems and processes are in place. In addition, I want to offer some free tools that we provide at the Capital Campaign Toolkit. So right on the homepage of the toolkit website, you can download a step-by-step guide to a capital campaign. So everything that you're going to need to know in sort of a step-by-step format we have on the Capital Campaign Toolkit. We also offer a free strategy session. So if you just want to talk to one of our campaign experts about what comes next or what you should do or what you're stressed about, that is a free resource that's open to you. So you can sign up to talk to us. The third and last one, and Madeline, if you put this somewhere, maybe in a follow-up email or in the chat box, we do offer a free assessment to see if you're ready for a capital campaign. And it's just capitalcampaigntoolkit.com/assess, A-S-S-E-S-S. And it is just a, you know, on a scale of 1 to 5, do we have these systems and processes and procedures in place? So it's a free tool that you can just go through. Do we have the donors? Is your board ready? You know, so you can see if you're ready for a campaign based on our free assessment tool.
That's really cool. Thanks. And Kevin?
Yeah, I want to, and with what Aaron and Becky and Amy have said, they're exactly right. But I want to shift the focus a little bit to you, the nonprofit, whether you're a board member or a staff member. Your best tools are in your heart. So have you rationalized your need to change your life to this degree for many months, if not years? Does it make sense to you to be doing this? Should that, you know, dedicate that amount of time? So rationale, and then, all right, it makes sense, but really, do I have the determination to do this? And it's not every other week, it's a little bit every day, if not, and Becky can probably attest to this in the size of her campaign, a lot of time, every day, day after day after day. And by the way, it's gonna wake you up at 3 a.m. for a long time, because things are going to go great and you're going to wake up in elation and say, God, I can't believe how blessed I am that this occurred. And then you're going to be in a trough where nobody's giving to you and everyone's waiting for Oprah to return your phone call and she isn't. And you're like, good, we're never going to get there. So that's the determination side. And then, you got to be brave. You've got to be so brave to get into this stuff, because it's a grind. And if you're not there every day, and if it's not resonating if you're in your heart, and if you're not driven to get up and to go out there and engage with these people, because believe me, no one in front of you is saying, hey, just hit that send button and the money's going to start coming in. The overall message here is you've got to get the data, you've got to get the strategy, you've got to get the cool tools, and then you've got to get in front of them. And you've got to really present a compelling reason why they should invest in your nonprofit. So get the rationale behind you. Make sure that you're determined, and not just you alone, please. And a couple of times we'll get clients, and it's probably an Amy thing, is like, how many people are going to be helping you do this? And too many times we'll see boards of directors, and you'll see a bunch of fingers pointing the opposite direction, or they're all pointing at the ED saying, she's got this. We're gonna go over here and watch her. So you've got plenty of people behind you, and man, you're brave. So if you've got those three things, I think you'll be in good shape.
That's wonderful. Thank you. So I just wanted to thank you so much. This is all the time that we have for questions today, but like I said, we will be sharing a follow-up blog post with some more written Q&A. I just wanted to share our panelists' information on the screen here, and I will be sharing this in a follow-up email as well, along with the recording. So I just want to extend a huge thank you to our panelists today. You shared your time and your expertise and some really wonderful resources with us, and I hope that everyone that's on the line today found this valuable and helpful. And like I said, we will be sharing the recording in a follow-up email, so keep an eye out for that. And if we can just kind of go around again for a final note from everyone, we'll start with Becky again, if that works.
Sure. I really loved what Kevin just said about being brave and really making sure that this effort is really kind of, igniting your own passion for your work, because it is a little bit of a grind. But, campaigns are, if nothing else, they are wonderful learning experiences, and and certainly take organizations to the next level through the power of philanthropy. So for all of the grind, there are moments of real joy, and they're fun, and great learning opportunities. So anybody who is thinking about this or just getting into it, good luck, and I'd love to connect with you if you have questions or if we can exchange ideas.
And Erin?
Well, I want to echo what Becky just said, and praise Kevin's point of, you know, needing to really have bravery. And I think also passion, you know, please don't do a campaign because you think you should. Please don't do a campaign because it's time to do a campaign. Do a campaign because it's imperative that your organization make an extraordinary impact on your community and your world. And if you do that as your North Star, you're going to find that you're capable of doing a lot more than you think. And like Becky, I just want to say I love talking to people, meeting new people. I'm on LinkedIn, and you're welcome to go to our website or email me anytime if I can be helpful.
And Amy?
Yeah, so I guess I would just say, you know, what everybody said. Campaigns are a unique opportunity to really engage with your donors and boost your fundraising capacity. Anybody who's worried that a campaign will cannibalize your annual fund, if you do your campaign well, not only does it not cannibalize your annual fund, it actually boosts your fundraising capacity and ability during the years that you're in the campaign and moving forward, because you strengthen all your systems and infrastructure. It's just an amazing tool to really catapult your organization and your capacity in so many ways. So I can't wait to hear about your campaigns, and good luck.
And Kevin?
Yeah, one last recommendation for those of you that are out there thinking about doing this. You took a little step in joining this webinar. And if you keep taking little steps, and I mean, like, you know, every week, little steps towards learning and educating, and Amy's site is a fantastic resource to educate yourself and prepare yourself for what might be that eventual leap into a capital campaign. We've got things on our website as well. But just keep taking those steps, because what I'll hear a lot of times is, people will come to us and say, yeah, we've been talking about this for 10 years. And that's probably two or three executive directors and some CEOs. And, you know, they've all just slow, steady progress. Because if you do see a need, and Aaron was talking about this, this is transformative. If your community has the option to be transformed by your mission, start taking little steps. And don't worry about the, you know, how are we ever going to raise $10 million? Just worry about your next step, and educating yourself and your leadership, and getting ready to jump off and learn about this and hopefully engage with it.
Awesome. Thank you so much for all of your insights today. And thank you to everyone who attended. Keep an eye out for this recording, and we hope to see you on our next webinar, and enjoy the rest of your week.
Thanks, iWave.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Hi, everybody.
I don't know how to. What am I doing here?